Support for IPR comes from Hands in Harmony, a therapeutic healthcare facility with a splash of spa and a team of holistic healers to help in the quest for health, harmony, and happiness. Cedar Rapids and Mount Vernon. Classes, massage, and more at myhih.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from IPR News. Today is Horticulture Day. I'm Charity Nebbe. The blossoms on a spring-blooming tree may be fleeting, but they are so beautiful that many of us are willing to pick a tree based strictly on what it might look like for a week or two out of the year. And there is absolutely nothing wrong with that. Jeff Iles is professor and chair of the Horticulture Department at Iowa State University, and he is known in some circles as King of the Crab Apples. Hello, Jeff.
Charity, good to be with you.
And it is perfect out there right now for people who love spring blooming trees. There are so many different varieties in bloom. What's your take? Has this been a fairly good spring for blossoms?
Well, it's like every spring in Iowa. There's good and there's not so good. But today's a beautiful day. It's nice and sunny. It's a little bit chilly out there. But it has been an interesting spring. Spring kind of got started back in February,
yeah.
Weirdly enough. And there's more to that story. But recently, it's been very nice. We've gotten some nice welcome rains, which helps. So I'm bullish on the year ahead.
However, the magnolias haven't put on much of a show this year. Tell me about that.
Well, and I'd be curious to hear from listeners as we go through the next hour if what I'm seeing is what other folks are seeing in the state. So there are several species of magnolia that failed to flower this spring. And when I went back and checked the weather records, it's probably not surprising. Remember, magnolia flowers were produced on the plant last summer. And so they hang out there all fall, all winter, and they're subject to the vagaries of the Iowa climate. But check this out. On February the 8th, we had a high of 62 degrees. On February 17, we had a low of 6. So here's another example. On February 26th, it went up to 78 degrees. And on February 28th, went down to 7. So woody plants don't like that kind of fluctuation in temperature. And it fools them. And in this case, I'm pretty sure those fluctuations in temperature cause flower bud death. Now, the vegetative buds will survive, which typically are more cold hardy, but flower buds on saucer magnolia, on star magnolia, on Loebner magnolia look, at least in this part of the state, look to have been killed, and that's why these magnolias didn't flower this year. So that's disappointing. We wait all year for this. It's like waiting all year for a holiday, and then it doesn't show up, and so it's disappointing.
Well, and magnolias are almost more of a gamble than a lot of the other spring-blooming trees. I feel like they're incredibly beautiful, but they don't tend to last very long.
Well, no, the flowers are fleeting. If we have wind or rain, that shortens the flowering period. And if it gets cold, then the flower tepals, the petals, look like strips of bacon. They get fried by low temperature. So, right, you've got to put these plants in the proper conditions, proper locations. The good news, though, there are some magnolias that did flower this spring. And it's those that have cucumber tree magnolia in their parentage. Cucumber tree magnolia is the only magnolia native to southern Canada, so it has much better cold hardiness. And so if you know the cultivar Butterflies, which is a yellow flowering magnolia, that one did just fine this spring. And I attribute that to its genetic advantage thanks to Magnolia acuminata, which is the cucumber tree magnolia.
Well, let's move on to some other spring blooming trees, because I know you have a long list of favorites. And that means we should just start with crabapples. Why do you love crabapples so much, Jeff?
Well, you know, it's one of those guilty pleasures. Like I like Barry Manilow. So what the heck? Let's like crab apples.
So are
well.
Crab apples the Barry Manilow of the trees?
No offense to Mr. Manilow. I'm probably going to get letters from his publicist. But crab apples are like the crepe myrtle of the north. They flower dependably. They're fragrant. They're beautiful. There's a growth habit for every situation. And I know they're cliche, and people don't like some of them because of their fruit, but the fruit display in the fall can be quite nice. The good news is there are better selections in the nursery trade today than there might have been 30 years ago. The flowers are beautiful. The disease resistance is beautiful. And so give them another chance. And so when we talk about crab apples, I like to be specific. There are some that I think are just outstanding. There's one called Coral Burst, which is a really nice selection. Raspberry Spear has a reddish purple flower, and the tree itself is more upright in its growth habit. There's one called Ruby Daze, and that's spelled D-A-Y-Z-E, Ruby Daze, which is another nice pink flower. And a couple of whites, if you like white flowering, Snow Crystal and Sparkling Sprite. I mean, these are great, great names. So don't give up on them. Give them another chance, you might be surprised. And most of these that I've mentioned are pretty easily found. Oh, and there's one more called Showtime. I mean, what's not to like about a crabapple named Showtime?
Well, and you seem a little defensive about crabapples. I personally have always loved them. But, I mean, has there been pushback? Do they feel like they're out of style somehow?
Oh, you know, people make fun of all kinds of plants, unfortunately. I mean, they're overused. And people have this negative perception because of past disease issues or dropping fruit. But come on. I mean, we all evolve as crabapples have. So, I'm defensive, Charity, darn it. And I'm here to speak on behalf of the crabs this morning.
Well, and I mean, even as somebody who loves them anyway, the crabapple trees, you talked about the fall display of fruit, but also it's great food for birds and bugs. You're supporting habitat too.
Exactly, exactly. I mean, thank you. Thank you for joining the team.
I'm definitely on the team. Well, and time of year is also the time of year when people drive around, and even if they say they don't like crabapples, they get really jealous of their neighbor's tree.
Well, and imagine a world without crabapples. Let's just start there. Where would Iowa be without the spring flowers of crabapples? So, imagine a world without pizza. So it's a similar thing.
So you gave us a nice list of crabapples, but moving beyond crabapples and magnolias, what are some other spring blooming trees that you recommend planting?
So let's back up to the beginning of the spring season. So I don't know if our listeners know much about witch hazels, but witch hazels are more like large shrubs, but there are some species and cultivars that flower in the spring of the year, early spring. Now we're talking February and March. There's one called Arnold Promise, which is a really nice early spring flowering witch hazel. Now, there are some that flower in the fall as well, which is interesting, but I'm talking about the ones that flower in the spring. There's also an understated yellow flowering plant called Cornus Moss, the Cornelian Cherry Dogwood, which flowers in March. And there's a new selection called Saffron Sentinel, which I have one of these in my yard, and it flowered beautifully this spring. So Cornus Moss, the Cornelian Cherry Dogwood, is extremely cold hardy, extremely tough, doesn't mind heat or drought, and has nice early spring yellow flowers.
And we got to enjoy those yellow flowers in the midst of snow this year, so they stand out.
No, the flowers of witch hazel and Cornelian Cherry Dogwood don't really care about the fluctuations in temperature. So I like plants that are low maintenance like that. And then, of course, if you're on campus today or any time this past week, you would have reveled in the beauty of redbuds. I love redbuds. They are native to southern parts of Iowa. But, man, when they're in flower, they're showstoppers. And it's a harbinger of spring. So you can't forget about redbuds.
And redbuds are relatively small trees. Does that make them something that's pretty easy to fit into your home landscape?
Well, relatively small. We have some beauties on campus that can grow 20, 25 feet tall by almost as wide. So in time or over time, they can grow quite large. And there are some newer selections that are a bit more refined in their growth habit. So you might choose those. But I'm a big fan of redbuds. And finally, we don't deal much with flowering cherries and plums, but there's a sergeant cherry called Pink Flare, which of the cherries, this is one of my favorites. It has a pinkish flower in the spring. It has more of an upright growth habit and seems to be a bit more cold hardy and a bit more environmentally tolerant to our weather than some of the other flowering cherries. So the famous Sergeant Cherry, named after a C.S. Sergeant, who was the first director of the Arnold Arboretum, honored with this species name.
Well, and of course, I think a lot of us see photos from Washington, D.C. during the cherry blossom season every year. And do, right, again, pangs of jealousy. I think that flowering trees really incite a lot of jealous feelings. But we do have cherry trees, like tart cherry trees, that are in bloom right now in Iowa. But those aren't the kinds of cherry trees that we see in Washington, D.C., or that you're talking about here with the pink flare, right?
Right. Pink flare is the Midwestern cherry that we can grow with confidence. The cherries you see out there in D.C. along the tidal basin are different species, and those would struggle here. So, you have to go to D.C. to see those. But we can come close with this Prunus argentii. Finally,
and does it fruit at all?
I very rarely, if at all. So it's not known for its fruit. It's just an ornamental plant with nice flowers and really quite attractive bark. And then, Charity, to bring up the tail end of the flowering tree season, we have some tree-form lilacs that do quite well for us. The Japanese tree lilac is one that flowers in June and is a very popular tree. There's one called Snow Dance that doesn't produce fruit. So if you're worried about plants that might make themselves at home, that would be a good selection to choose. And then there's a species, common name, Pekin lilac, There's one called China Snow Pekin lilac that has amazing bark, kind of a peeling cinnamon brown colored bark, really quite beautiful. So, you can start flowering in February and carry it right on through to March by the wise choice of your woody plant trees.
It feels right now, and we only have about 30 seconds, but it feels like everything is in bloom at once, maybe even more than usual to me. The lilacs seem to be in full bloom at the same time as the red buds. This has been kind of a weird weather spring.
We've had flower compression, flowering tree compression, which is unfortunate. You've got to be out. In fact, I don't sleep. I just walk around 24 hours a day watching trees because it'll be here and gone before you know
it. It's the only thing to do.
It's what else are you going to do? But it's unfortunate, but that's the way our springs typically go anyway. So.
Jeff Iles is professor and chair of the horticulture department at Iowa State University. For more gardening information and tips, you can subscribe to our Garden Variety newsletter. You can find out more at iowapublicradio.org/garden and get out there and enjoy the blossoms. I'm Charity Nebbe.
Support for IPR comes from Hands in Harmony, a therapeutic healthcare facility with a splash of spa and a team of holistic healers to help in the quest for health, harmony, and happiness. Cedar Rapids and Mount Vernon. Classes, massage, and more at myhih.com. This IPR podcast is supported by Cultivating Compassion, the Dr. Richard Deming Foundation, fostering causes that enrich the community, generate understanding, and cultivate compassion, including Above and Beyond Cancer.
It's Talk of Iowa from IPR News. I'm Charity Nebbe. Today is Horticulture Day. With me, Jeff Iles, professor and chair of the Horticulture Department at Iowa State University. And also here now, Aaron Stile, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. Hello, Aaron.
Good morning.
And of course, you are welcome to join the conversation as well. Give us a call, 866-780-9100, 866-780-9100, or you can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And we're going to start with a question from Jimmy. Jimmy says, all of my pear trees are covered in blossoms. Will this upcoming freeze prevent pollination? That's his first question. So we'll just start with that one.
It is possible. So we were talking about earlier, flowers, especially the further along they are developed, are less cold hardy. And so if you have a tree in full bloom, it can be temperatures as low as 30 degrees, and you'll see some die back in stamens or pistils or the reproductive structures of the flower. And so it is possible, and only really time will tell if it had a big impact. But based on what we've been seeing out at the Horticulture Research Station, there is likely going to be a much smaller crop of all of our fruit trees this year than typical.
All right. And of course, we've been worrying about that. I'm just going to say we. I know I've been worrying about that since February. So we've all been waiting for this. Jimmy also says, I transplanted some shrubs earlier this year and they have tiny leaves. Should I cover them?
They'll be okay. They'll be okay. And even if they do get a little bit of damage from the cold, it gets colder than we expect, they'll drop off and new ones will grow.
All right. And we've just been talking about spring blooms, and Diana points out, and rightly so, she says, let's talk about the northern part of the state. We are probably 2 weeks behind the conversations you're having. Will we see anything different since we're so much later? She says, very little budding here.
Yeah, they could be seeing the same things just in a delayed fashion. So I would assume that they saw a rather an early spring or inordinately warm February, and those kinds of conditions are hard on woody plants, regardless of where you are in the state. So I'd be curious to hear what happens up there in a few weeks, but I assume they might see something similar to what we're seeing down here.
All right. You can email your questions to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org or call 866-780-9100. Sarah in Waverly says, our lawn is very bumpy and uneven and seems to be getting worse. We like to play lawn games such as croquet and badminton, but it's so uneven you can turn your ankle walking on it, let alone running. Any suggestions for smoothing out the lawn?
Yeah. So I will say the one thing I do not suggest that you will see people suggest is rolling your lawn. So getting a big, heavy kind of wheel-like structure, it just causes so much compaction. Typically, when we have rough, bumpy lawns, we can core aerate and then top dress with topsoil or compost. It'll take several rounds of this, so it's not going to happen overnight. But what that can do is kind of help reduce some of the compaction and then also add a layer of organic material on top. Now, when we add in topsoil or compost, we want to make sure we can still see the grass when we're done. So it has to kind of fall down in between the blades of grass. We're not trying to smother the grass here. So it's going to be a pretty fine layer, but several rounds of that will definitely help in this situation.
866-780-9100 is the number. Stuart is on the line in Forest City. Hello, Stuart.
Good morning.
Hi, what's your question?
Colin, I got some asparagus and some strawberry plants ordered through the mail, and then probably should have got all that ground prepped when it was really nice and not 2 inches of rain, but I can't imagine I'll be able to do much here for a week to 10 days. Wanted to understand what I should be doing with those asparagus. You call them rhizomes or are they corms? And then
sure.
The strawberry plants as well, just to make sure I keep them as healthy and as functional without, you know, ruining them.
Yeah, so they'll likely come bare root in some way.
Yep.
Store them in a cool, dark location. And one of the big things to keep in mind is it'll come with some kind of packing material around it, sphagnum moss or some other kind of spongy-like material. And that should be damp, but not wet. So it probably should be about the dampness of a wrung out sponge. So check on it during that week. If you put it in your fridge or something like that, don't put it in the same fridge as a lot of fruit and vegetables. They give off ethylene that can negatively impact those. So if you have like a basement fridge that has nothing but cans of stuff in it or something like that, that would be a great spot for it. And just make sure it doesn't dry out and plant them as soon as you can get the soil worked.
Very good. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for the call, Stuart. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Suzanne is on the line in Iowa City with a magnolia report for you, Jeff. Hello, Suzanne.
Hi, Charity. Yeah, I wanted to report on the status of my very large, mature magnolia. For 20 years, the blossoms have been anywhere from good to magnificent. But this year, I've counted 6 blossoms on the entire tree.
Yeah, it's disappointing, isn't it?
Yeah. I kind of thought it would happen. I assumed it was from the blizzard and the cold temperatures in January, but it sounds like you think it was more February weather?
Yep. I'm guessing that it was that. I mean, magnolias were completely cold hardy. They were ready for winter. So anything we threw at them in January, they were ready for. But whenever you start warming up and then cooling down, and you do that over a number of times, those flower buds lose their acclimatized state. And so if you pick off one of those flower buds and open it up, you'll notice that it's probably black inside.
Got very big.
Yeah, I just attribute that to the fluctuating temperatures, and these were wildly fluctuating. I mean, And it was 60, 70 degree swings. Woody plants just don't handle that. At least some woody plants don't handle that. Crab apples do, some magnolias don't.
Yeah, I've noticed the same is true of the magnolias in my neighborhood. These are the saucer magnolias, I guess they are. Although a couple of star magnolias seem to do better.
And it, again, if they were positioned in the landscape where they got a bit more protection, that could help them. If they were covered by snow, that could have helped. But, we'll have to wait till next year.
Yep. Just wanted to give you another data point.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you for the call, Suzanne. And anybody else with magnolia observations, you are welcome to call 866-780-9100 or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Larry's up next in Mason City. Hi, Larry.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What's your question?
So I noticed this year, and actually I noticed them a little bit last year, but this year there are more pronounced, these large rings in my backyard. And the guy that fertilizes my yard did a little research and told me they're called fairy rings.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't think that there was much to them. He said he has thought that all you need to do is aerate that area better and it would lessen them or eventually make them go away. And when you
Are there mushrooms?
No, I Googled it too. I see sometimes they, now I shouldn't say that there have been mushrooms in my yard before, but I don't know that I ever paid attention if they were on that ring or not.
Yeah. Yeah. Fairy rings are kind of interesting, especially when they produce mushrooms. But typically you'll see a darker green grass in that ring and it's because that fungus is breaking down some things in the soil and it actually provides some extra nutrients for those grass plants in that immediate area. Aeration is always a nice thing to do, but if you don't like the look of it, fertilizing will mask it because it'll green up the rest of the grass too. So that's always an option as well. I think they're kind of enchanting. They're not around a long time and often they'll get so big you don't even see the whole ring anymore or they'll disappear because whatever that fungus is feeding on has been exhausted. Sometimes it's a stump or an underground root that's died. It could be a number of different things, but I think they're kind of fun. If you don't want to see them, you can fertilize and it'll mask it.
Okay, and that's what he said also. He said once the other grass catches up with it, you probably won't even know they're there.
Yeah.
Okay, so, but I mean, they're nothing that, not dangerous.
They're,
I mean, there's nothing.
They're not.
I mean.
Nope, they're not of detriment to the lawn.
And if you get up on a moonlit night and you go outside at midnight, you can see fairies dancing, right?
Yeah. I don't know that that's been proven in any research, but.
Well, Larry, report back, okay? You can join the conversation. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Jim in Colo says, now that our mature blueberry bushes are starting to bud, there appear to be some dead canes on bushes that have other healthy canes. Can the dead canes be removed now? And if so, should I cut them at the base?
You can prune back anything that is dead. I would probably wait just a couple more weeks to make sure that it is truly dead. We are very much ahead of schedule. Usually it's like May before I make any decisions about removing potentially dead stems. But anything that's dead, you can remove when you know that it is truly dead. You could also go up if it snaps in half really easily, it's dead. You could prune it off. And I would prune it off down to living tissue, wherever that is. If it's at the base, fine. But otherwise, just above a living bud is fine, too.
Well, and one of my friends on Facebook this week put up a PSA. She said, if you have asparagus in your garden, you need to go check. Because you should probably be harvesting asparagus. I mean, everything is ahead of schedule. If you don't have your
everything
eyes on it, you should probably go look at it, right?
For much of the state, it's at least 2 weeks. And in some areas, it's almost three. So yes, we are definitely ahead of schedule.
866-780-9100 is the number to call. We've got a couple of lines open for you right now. And Christine says, our large oak in the red family has dropped its leaves in March for decades in Iowa City. This year, it dropped them all by early to mid-December, and the wind seems to trim the branches at least as much, if not more than usual. Should I be concerned about the health of this tree? Is there anything I should do?
So Christine's talking about the older leaves that typically oaks hang onto their leaves all winter long. So they came off early, which, again, that could be weather related. The twig drop is something else, and I'm not sure what's going on there. There are all kinds of reasons trees drop things. There are some fungal cankers that can cause that to happen. So I don't know. I need more information. If this is an old tree, it might be worth having an arborist come out, a certified arborist come out, and give the tree a look. But there's just not enough there, Charity, for me to know what's really going on.
Christine, if you're listening and you want to call with some follow-up, give us a call. 866-780-9100 is the number. Ruth is on the line in Ames with a magnolia report for us. Hi, Ruth.
Hi, Charity. Thanks for taking my call. I just have a magnolia report. Actually, our star magnolia, which has been with us for, I think, 20 years, had very few blooms, and they were much later than usual and lasted just only maybe a day and a half or 2 days. But it's full of, it's leafing out really nicely. And across the driveway from that is our purple magnolia, which is usually about 4 or 5 days later than the star magnolia. It bloomed at the same time. It's full of blooms, just full of blooms. Oh, it's okay. Really gorgeous. Then we have a crab apple tree in the back that is just starting to come out to pink. So we've got kind of a nice progression of blooming trees where we have first the star magnolia, then the serviceberry, then the purple magnolia, and lastly, but not least, a couple of crabapple trees. So the way our trees have been planted, we get a succession of blooms, which, you know, keeps the spring flowering trees going a little bit longer in our yard.
Yeah, you guys planned it very, very well, Ruth. That sounds just gorgeous.
Ruth, before you, is she still there?
Yep.
Ruth, do you know the name of the purple-leaved magnolia? Do you remember the cultivar name of that one?
I'm sorry, I do not. And I was thinking, you know, I wish that I had that information, but no, it's a kind of a dwarf version. So, it's a dwarf. And as the blooms come out, they get they get paler in color.
You know,
kind of get toward the serviceberry pink type. Yeah. But down the block, we have just a gorgeous display of red buds, some of which my husband planted for our neighbors, just, you know, from little sprouts that came up in the yard over the years. And it's really a lovely display, a one block long street.
Well, we should all have neighbors like you, Ruth. Congratulations. Great job.
We should.
Thank you. Bye now.
Bye. 866-780-9100 is the number to call with your questions or your tree report for us today. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Stanley in Iowa City says, how do seeds know how long they spend frozen? It seems like once it's frozen, there would be no biological mechanisms for a seed to know how long it's been frozen. And then Stanley also wants to know if there's a way to trick a seed and accelerate the process.
Well, you definitely can stratify seed very efficiently in your refrigerator. So that stratification would be like a cold treatment. And the physiology behind it, I don't recall exactly what it is that they're keeping track of in terms of the temperatures or the time and the mechanism that they're using for that. But most like tree seed, most prairie plant seed, most native plants, temperatures between freezing and about 40, 35 degrees for usually 8 to 10 weeks works for most of our plants. Some of them are different, but of course our winters are much longer than 8 to 10 weeks. So they definitely sit kind of dormant almost for some time during our winters. So I can't tell you the physiological mechanism that they use for this, but it certainly is something that you can do on an accelerated way in your own refrigerator.
Okay, so that's not exactly tricking them, but
no,
you can make
no,
it happen.
You're just being efficient.
All right, Stanley, thanks for the question. We are going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a few minutes. And you can join the conversation with your questions. Give us a call. 866-780-9100 is the number. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me today, Aaron Stile, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist, and Jeff Iles, Professor and Chair of the Horticulture Department at Iowa State University. This is Talk of Iowa.
This IPR podcast is supported by Cultivating Compassion, the Dr. Richard Deming Foundation, fostering causes that enrich the community, generate understanding, and cultivate compassion, including above and beyond cancer.
It's Talk of Iowa from IPR News. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and you are welcome to join the conversation with your questions or your magnolia observations this hour. You can give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me, Aaron Stile, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist, and Jeff Iles, Professor and Chair of the Horticulture Department at Iowa State. And we've got another magnolia report for you, Jeff. This one's from Waterloo. Bill says that he has a white and pink magnolia that has at least 200 blooms on it. So, or he has white and pink magnolias that have probably at least 200 blooms on them. So they're doing well in Waterloo and Cedar Falls. So.
Interesting. I wonder why.
That's good. I certainly don't have any answers for you. Let's go.
But this is why we ask the question,
right? Let's go back to the phones. Karen is on the line in Carlisle. Hi, Karen.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question about cutting back my clematises. I usually cut them down to the ground early spring. They've gotten ahead of me now. I don't know what the name of it is, but the regular purple clematis. Mm-hmm. It's all the way up my trellis, and it's real green on the top. Shall I just leave them and not cut them back now, or what should I do?
I would be inclined to just leave it. The clematis doesn't need to be cut back. We do it for the aesthetics. It just looks nicer than this big kind of bramble of dead vines. And so one season's worth isn't going to be a big deal. I probably, especially mine at home, is also well ahead of schedule growing out, and just letting it be is fine.
Okay. And I've got one, Sweet Autumn. There's a lot of it, you know, wrapped around a fence. It's on the top of a chain link fence, and there's a lot of dead, and it hasn't really leaped out into that yet. It would be okay just to pull that dead off the fence now or not?
Yes. And Sweet Autumn clematis can be pruned all the way back to the ground and not affect its flowering at all. So you can remove as much of it as you want.
Okay, and I have one other question unrelated to any of this.
Sure.
I have a lot of river rock, which has proven to be kind of a mistake because it gets full of dirt and everything grows in the dirt. But I always have a lot of dandelions growing in that river rock. What's the best way to get rid of those?
You understand my aversion to river rock as well.
I know.
It's hard to dig them out, of course, because the rock makes it difficult to dig.
Right.
Those dandelions, dandelion is a perennial weed, so it's going to come back year after year from the same root. So what's there, you're going to have to figure out how to get rid of, either with a herbicide or by digging. But you can also use pre-emergent herbicides to prevent the germination of new dandelions. And that can work well in a difficult kind of rock mulch situation like this if you wanted to use a pre-emergent herbicide. So it's not going to get rid of the ones that are there, but it can help prevent new ones from getting established.
Because I spend the whole summer digging and spraying, and I've found even spraying down where I've dug them out doesn't keep them from coming back.
Yeah. And if you do spray, it's probably best to just spray the plant. The more green tissue that's there that can absorb that herbicide, the more that can be taken down to that big, thick tap root and get rid of it.
Karen, thank you so much for the call. 866-780-9100 is the number. You can email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Jan is on the line in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Jan.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
Well, we're wondering why we are seeing so much creeping Charlie this year, like acres of it, and if it has any nutritional value if they plow it under.
You won't get rid of it if you plow it under. It roots so readily from those long stems that you'll plow it under and it'll just regrow. Like any plant, you know, decomposing plant material will provide some organic matter for the soil, which has a minimal amount, but a little bit of nutritional or nutrients that would be available for plants to use. But if you want to get rid of Creeping Charlie, you're going to have to remove it from the area, either by hand and hand pulling, which is, of course, a lot of work, or by using a herbicide. This time of year, Creeping Charlie is very noticeable. And so that's part of it, too, is this is really standing out. And I don't know that there's been any certain types of weather conditions that have made it more or less favorable than any other year. But it certainly is very noticeable, especially this time of year.
I will also throw in there that when we're talking about acres, I have seen red clover being used as a cover crop in some fields. So that mm-hmm. wouldn't explain a field of Creeping Charlie in town.
No,
but
no. it takes advantage of places where the turf isn't happy. It's usually shady spots or compacted spots. Places where, I mean, grass is a good competitor, but if it's not full sun, if the soil conditions aren't very good, Creeping Charlie tolerates kind of poor conditions better, and so it takes over. So if this area of the yard is particularly shady, or if it's compacted, it's a really good competitor in those less than ideal situations for turf grass. So one of the best ways to get ahead of Creeping Charlie is to have a really healthy stand of turf grass. Sometimes that's easy and sometimes it's not. And that's part of what makes people hate this plant so much.
Yeah, but somewhere Richard Duran is smiling right now. he's not.
No one hates ground ivy more than Richard Duran. All right. Jim and Marion has this question. He says, I planted a new strawberry bed with bare root plants in a raised bed this week. I used some Upstart solution on these plants. The garden personnel cautioned against using a granular fertilizer as it would burn the roots. Anything else you'd recommend?
Just making sure that you're watering when things get dry. These new plants are putting on a lot of roots and a lot of new growth here in the next couple of weeks. And so far, the rain has actually been pretty favorable across much of the state. But if it does dry out, keeping up on the watering is going to be important. It's okay to baby these things just a little bit. You're not toughening them up early on, at least, by ignoring them. So keep up with the watering, and that should help quite a bit.
More good magnolia news. This is from Sherry in Marshalltown. She says, I have a 3-year-old Laura magnolia at the top of my pond's waterfall, along with a redbud. Both have been blooming beautifully. I was pleasantly surprised, as I hadn't seen that many flower buds on the magnolia this year.
Yep. Well, it's all about genetics. And Laura must be, is it one of the little girls series?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So some of those are just better at withstanding the kind of crazy weather we had earlier this year. So well done. Congratulations.
Let's go to the phones. Lori's on the line in Iowa City. Hi, Lori.
Hello, and thank you so much for this great program. My question has to do with a plant that started out lovely and has now become overwhelming. It's called Star of Bethlehem, and I need to know how to get rid of it. I have tried hand pulling, and sometimes that works, but there's so much of it now that it's
yes.
just choking out other plants.
Yeah, this one can be hard. And one of the reasons why this one is difficult is it kind of has like a small bulb underground. And that makes hand pulling difficult because typically the leaf will pull out, but you won't get the bulb. And so it usually grows in little clumps. So digging out the clumps with a trowel or a weeder can be pretty effective if you want to do by hand. Herbicides can be a little challenging too because it has that bulb. And so it often takes multiple applications and it has to be spot sprayed. There isn't really a lot of herbicides that are going to selectively get the Star of Bethlehem and not injure some of the other plants in the area. And so that would be your other option, but it'll likely take more than one application to do that. This is a tough time of year to control weeds like this. Spring is. If you can find it in the fall, sometimes it dies back and it's harder to find in the fall. Or if you can find it in summer as it's dying back, that would be a better time to apply the herbicide because more of it will be pulled down into that bulb that's underground with the hopes of killing it. So those are probably your options. Digging is the non-chemical option. And if you do decide to dig, I would buy a bag of topsoil, dig out the clumps, and then just fill the hole in with topsoil and get rid of it because then you know you have all those little bulbs and you don't leave any behind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does die back, as you said, and actually it dies back pretty quickly after it blooms. And that's the problem is then you don't see it anymore.
Yeah, you don't see where it's at. So hitting it with a herbicide, if you choose to do that, would be... at that time, like right at the end of flowering, would probably be more effective than trying to do it as it's sprouting up.
Okay. It just spreads unbelievably, even to areas that are not even close by. It's not a good thing. It's pretty, but it's not a good thing.
It is a cute little plant, but it can be a little overwhelming sometimes.
Thanks for the call, Lori. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Lisa's on the line in West Des Moines. Hi, Lisa.
Hi. Yes, I have a question about my iris bed. I cover it with, we have a lot of oak trees and maple, and I cover it with leaves in the fall. But then in the spring, I'm never sure when to take off the leaves, because if I wait too long, the plants are sprouting up and I break them off and I don't know if they'll take a hard freeze. So what is your recommendation?
Yeah, so I'm assuming this is bearded iris.
Kind of
the classic bearded iris. Okay. They do sprout relatively early. They're some of our first perennials to come up most years. And they are relatively cold hardy. And so you could probably, in most years, I would say, mid-March is a nice time to remove that kind of material. This year, that would have been a little late even. But in most years, just at the very end, when we know the worst of winter is done, it's still cold, but it's not, single digits kinds of situations. That's typically mid-March, spring break kind of time. You can remove it then, and it will tolerate the rest of the winter and early spring fairly well.
Okay. Great. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for the call. And we have a follow-up to our magnolia report from Ruth in Ames. Her husband, Jake, called back to say that the pink magnolia that Ruth was talking about is an Ann magnolia developed by National Arboretum specifically to avoid the hazards of late frost and freeze.
Wow. Good. That is good information.
Absolutely. So, thank you, Jake, and Ruth.
And
let's go back to the phones. We've got Sandy on the line near Winterset. Hi, Sandy.
Hello.
What's your question?
My son built a new house, and the yard really isn't a yard. It's heavy clay, hardly any humus. Is there anything recommended for ground cover, grass, whatever that could grow on this?
Yes. Depending on whether you're in sun or shade, there are quite a few different options ground cover wise. And of course, you could establish turf if you wanted to. The important thing will be to try to work in some organic matter, especially at this point when there isn't a lot of vegetation there that you would have to disturb to get some of this organic matter in. And so bringing in some organic matter, spreading it on top, maybe even working it into the top 4 or 6 inches of soil if you can, will make a huge difference no matter what you put down, whether it's a ground cover or turf or something else. And now would be the time to do that. It's a little bit of investment in time and materials, but it'll make a big difference if you can bring in several inches of compost or organic matter and work it into the top 4 or 6 inches of the soil. And even if you only choose to do it for a relatively prominent area of your lawn, it'll make things better in the long run.
All right.
Well, that's good advice. Are there any cultivars you'd recommend? It's in sun.
Okay. Being in full sun, if you wanted to establish turf, you could. And any of the typical turf grasses that we grow, Kentucky bluegrass, perennial rye, the narrow leafed or turf type tall fescues, all of them can be really nice turf grasses for us. In terms of ground covers, there are several, and I would probably look at a mix of ground covers, things like creeping thyme. There's sedums, lots of different sedums that would do well in full sun. But if you're going to, especially both of those plants I just mentioned, would not tolerate really heavy soils very well. And so only if you amended the soils would I recommend planting those. We also have a pretty long list of ground covers. If you Google ground covers sun Iowa State, it'll pull up a list of at least 24 other options. They're arranged by height, and you can kind of decide what might work well for you. Any of those would be good options for kind of a clean slate like this to get started.
Sandy, thanks a lot for the call. Karen and Clive wants to know, is it too late to apply pre-emergent crabgrass preventer fertilizer in central Iowa for it to be effective? Oof. Or, no, I heard the oof. She says, or do you not really recommend it at all?
Yeah, it might be a little too late. I don't know. It's been a weird year. Typically, this is the sweet spot for applying these pre-emergent herbicides. But we had some really warm temperatures. Soil temperatures are still relatively cool the last couple of days. And so there's a lot of seed from crabgrass. Some of it may have germinated, but putting it down this weekend might prevent more from germinating. And you might have been lucky and they haven't started yet and you'll get better control than you think. So I don't think it's a lost cause, but you may not have the level of control that you were hoping for applying it this time of year. Other years.
All right. And final question. Sonia in Iowa City says our lilac is producing very few flowers. Is this due to weather variations? And is it correct to prune lilacs after flowering by 1/3? We've never done this.
Yeah, lilacs can be kind of tricky. If it's an older lilac, perhaps it's just overgrown and needs some pruning. So yes, you can prune after flowering, or you do some pruning in the late dormant season and you thin it out a bit. Allow better light to penetrate, and that might also help it flower better.
All right. Jeff Iles, thank you so much.
My pleasure, Charity. Always good to be with you.
Jeff Iles, professor and chair of the Horticulture Department at Iowa State University. Aaron Stile, thank you.
You're welcome.
Aaron Stile, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. Talk of Iowa is a production of IPR News. Our producers are Caitlin Troutman, Samantha McIntosh, and Danny Gear. We had production support today from Kate Perez and technical support from Steve Cooper. I'm Charity Nebbe. Have a great weekend.